The Torah begins Parshas Vayeshev by noting Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Aviv, that Yaakov Avinu tried to live, to settle in the land of his forefathers. And Rashi tells us, because Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva, that Yaakov Avinu wanted to rest in peace. And as a result, the anger, the roges of Yosef happened. It seems as if there's a cause and effect here, if the Rashi's trying to identify that because Yaakov Avinu wanted to sit Bishalva, that's why Kafatzal of Rigzono Shel Yosef. It seems almost crazy. Why is it such a sin to desire to sit in peace? So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Lifshitz, the author of the Chemda Shlomo, the original Rav of Vilna, explains, based on the Sefer Chovos Halavavos, that if we rely on Hashem, we'll discover the challenges of Olam Hazeh are small. The fact of the matter is that Yaakov's desire for serenity now in Olam Hazeh was an indication that he was overwhelmed over here too. Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva, he wanted the peace and serenity now as opposed to later on. The peace and serenity for Talmidei Chachamim come in the future. Nowadays, we have a responsibility to turn around and keep working, keep plugging away. In fact, in that connection to that thought, the Sefer Shalom Lo Yachzar tells a story about Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank records the story, I believe, in his diaries concerning the Beis Halevi. Man comes running to the Beis Halevi and he tells the Beis Halevi, my daughter has been in labor for 3 days. She's in terrible pain. And it's Shabbos morning, and what are we supposed to do? I want the Rav, the Beis Halevi, to daven for her. So the Beis Halevi listens to the man, and after a couple of minutes asks the man, did you make Kiddush yet? And the kid says, the man says, no. He says, come to my house, let's make Kiddush. So he goes into the house, and he makes Kiddush with the Beis Halevi, and he says to the fellow, did you eat Suda Shabbos yet? And the fellow says, no. He says, good, so you'll be my guest for Suda Shabbos. And he makes Hamotzi, and he has the man sit with him, and the man is sitting with him, and the man is enjoying the Suda with the Beis Halevi, with the good food and the good thoughts, etc. After the meal is done, the Beis Halevi turns to the man and he says to the man, go home, I think you'll hear good news. So he goes home and he finds out that indeed his daughter had a son. He became a grandfather. So when he told the Beis Halevi, the Beis Halevi told him that's exactly what the meaning of the pasuk is. V'sanag al Hashem, v'itein mishalos libecha. When you put your delight, your comfort, your serenity onto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give mishalos libecha. The fact of the matter is that that's our responsibility. It's not to be mevakish, to go on all sorts of other means of serenity. It's al Hashem. That's where we find the ultimate serenity. We find out about Yosef. Yaakov loved Yosef. Ki ben zekunim hulo. Yeah. So Rashi over here interprets ben zekunim three ways. Because he was born when Yaakov was old. Because he became a zakein. He became an individual, became wise because of Yaakov Avinu. Or, and this Rashi quotes from Targum Yonasan, his face looked like that of Yaakov Avinu. So Rav Isaac Osban Shalita, the Rishim in Riverdale, explains that these different interpretations are actually the same. Because when a Talmud truly immerses himself in Torah's Rabbo, in the Torah of his Rebbe, so he begins to look at and even become an extension of the Rebbe. This is part of the process of the Masorah. So therefore, by definition, B'ki ben zekunim, he almost looked like him. It's not that Targum Yonasan is arguing on the earlier position, but rather that Yosef and Yaakov became like in mind, thought, deed, and even impression. The brothers, the Torah finally uses the language Vayikanu bo echav, that the brothers were jealous of Yosef. And this concept of kinna only enters the brothers' minds after the second dream. Now, why were they filled with kinna after that dream and not the earlier one? It says that they hated him after the first dream. So Rav Soloveitchik explains that the earlier dream was one about economic superiority. The second dream was about Yosef's declaration of memshala, of his lordship over his brothers. You know, Jewish psychology asks the question, why do we need leaders? That is to say, the nature of the Jew is to believe that everybody can be a leader. Everybody has the ability to be a leader. And when somebody tries to become a lord in that process, to demand leadership, so the Jewish people are going to ask, "Kamaloch temloch aleinu." Yosef HaTzadik had a unique trait. Yosef HaTzadik was a charismatic leader. He charmed everybody who met him, whether it was Potiphar, whether it was the Sarah Tabachim, whether it was the Sar Beis HaSoar, whoever it was, anywhere Yosef went, Yosef was quite charismatic. But there are a lot of leaders who have a lot of different levels of charisma, allow me to add. When Rabbi Akiva brought out the masses, as Rabbi Soloveitchik notes, he was able to bring out the masses using his charisma for a higher purpose. I'd like to add to that of course Korach also used his charisma to be makil kilos, to shape and to lead. But he was the center. He was using his charisma to lead the people, not because he had a higher purpose, not to lead them towards a higher goal, but by lording himself over the people. And this was, by definition, one of the differences of opinion that existed between Yosef and the brothers, that the brothers assumed that Yosef was trying to be hamaloch timloch, and it wasn't based on the economics, it was based on the everybody being mishtach of Eli, and that was a very major source of contention. Reuven makes the declaration that he wanted Yosef thrown into the pit. Why? Because he wanted Laman Hatzilo, so mi Adam lachziro al aviv, in order to save him from their hands and return him to the father. And Rashi explains that Reuven had an internal dialogue with himself, explaining why he should save Yosef. Said Reuven to himself, "The fact is, I'm the oldest, and therefore I'm supposed to be the most responsible." Question has to be raised, why didn't Reuven say internally the obvious? It's wrong to go ahead and kill Yosef. And so therefore, the right thing to do is to save Yosef. Why is he changing the focus? So the late great Reb Mordechai Eliezer, Tzadik Livracha, explains that if Reuven had offered to save Yosef for the real reason, that it was the right thing, then Reuven's Yetzer Hara would have trapped him and attempted to break him in the process, not to do the right thing. Therefore, Reuven convinced himself of the secondary reason's primacy, so that therefore, when his Yetzer Hara would attack him, it would attack the secondary reason. At the same time, the primary reason, yeah, but it's the right thing to do, would be lost. In other words, sometimes we have to sort of stay off an immediate pressure. And in order to stay off that immediate pressure, we have a responsibility to step up to the plate and use all the secondary reasons to serve as a distraction for our Yetzer Hara in order to get us past the original moment that exists and the initial pangs of the Yetzer Hara. After Yosef is sold, we take a deviation from Yosef and read all about Yehuda. And the Medrash explains that the Torah uses the language Vayered Yehuda Me'es Echav, and the Medrash explains that the brothers excommunicated Yehuda when they realized that his advice wasn't correct. But Benny Laushlita, who should receive Nechame, lost his father this week. And Benny Lau explains that the entire Perek Lamed Ches that tells the story of Yehuda and Tamar demonstrates Yehuda's slide in life at this moment in time. First, Yehuda hangs out with a bad crowd, the Kananim. We know that the Kananim did not have a very high standing in the eyes of the Avos. Then Yehuda literally intermarries with a Kanani woman, right? A woman from the same group that his grandparents saw as Ra'os, as bad, as evil, right? And then he engages in a lifestyle that has values passed through to the children, that all of which just really demonstrate a big slide, onanism, no care for anyone but yourself. But Benny explains and suggests that Yehuda's free-fall life finally stops when Tamar asks him, Hakerna, recognize this. Do you see these psilim and these chosamos? He was almost guilty of murder. And Rabbeinu says that this is similar to a situation that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes about in a piyut that is recited by Ashkenazim on at the time of a bris milah. The piyut responds to Christianity's claim that the Jewish idea of Am HaNivchar, the Jewish idea of the fact that we're the chosen nation, is no longer true. So Rabbi Yehuda Halevi responds to that in a beautiful piyut. And in the middle of the piyut, the poet declares Hakerna, that like Tamar, being taken into the fiery furnace, throughout history we too have always had signs that stand up for that which is just and right. And as Yehuda returns to his leadership position based on the Chosamos and the Psilim, we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to return as well and to realize Tzadka Mimeni, that we've managed to last this long, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make sure that we last long as well. Torah continues and uses the language in regard to the Tamar situation as she was being taken out. He mutzeis, and she said to Yehuda, La'ela asher lo anochi hara, to the one who owes the chosamos and the psilim, that's the one I'm pregnant to. And Rashi explained that Tamar didn't want to embarrass Yehuda publicly. And the Gemara in Sota determines, based on this, that mutav la'adam sheyapel atzmo l'kivshan ha'esh, it's better for a person to be burned into a fiery furnace, v'al'yabim p'nei chaver b'rabim, and not embarrass a friend. But I don't understand. Why didn't Tamar apply the title of Rodef to Yehuda here? He was about to kill her, and if she would have killed him through halbanas panim, through embarrassing him, why don't we say haba lahargecha hashkem lahargo, that someone is coming to kill you, right? Rush and kill him, and allow his embarrassment to be a solution to our own potential demise. So my dear friend Rav Zev Wolbe Shlita from Passaic quotes his grandfather of Shlomo Volbe Zatzal, who explains that Tamar was not obligated to give up her life. She decided to do it, and so therefore it wasn't halachically a suicide. She wanted to build on a life built upon actions that were created by bad midos. Better to be in a kivshan ha'ich, she decided, than to embarrass somebody permanently. The Torah turns around and repeats and goes back to the story that happens with Yosef in Potiphar's house. And of course, each and every day, the wife of Potiphar tries to seduce Yosef. And on that day, Vayavo Abaisa Lasos Malachto. Now Yosef is referred to as Hatzadik because he withstood the temptation of the wife of Potiphar. Rashi notes that either he stayed off the advances of Mrs. Potiphar, or Demus Tiyukto Shal Aviv, he saw his father's image which held him back from sinning. So which image was it that he got? So Mori V'Rabbi Rav Shachter Shalita explains that being Ben Zakunim, that being a sense of being the next one who received the Torah, means that he was supposed to be the next link in the Masorah. And if he sins in such a grave manner, he won't deserve to be that link in the Masorah. Says Rav Shachter, those who are Mezalzel in Torah don't get to be looked up to as part of the Chachmei Masorah. Sometimes in life we find that our Rabbanim, our Jewish leaders, don't always meet up to the level that they're supposed to. We certainly know about the Shabtai Tzvi and others. We don't turn around and assume that that's part of the Masorah. By definition, as Rabbi Bernard Rosenzweig used to say, those who don't live by the Masorah die from the Masorah. Those who don't live and make the Masorah not only that which they talk about, but that which becomes a creed of their lives, then eventually it's the Masorah that does them in. We have a responsibility to realize, as Yosef did, we want to be a part of this great chain. And in order to do so, we have to live Jewish life to the fullest. The Haftorah finally deals with the issue of Al Shlosha Pishei Yisrael Ve'al Arba Lo Ashiven. And what's interesting, the Navi Amos rebukes Melucha, the kingdom of the north, for the fact that it inflicted harm on its fellow members of the community. It's interesting because all the Averos mentioned here are Averos of Bein Adam L'Chaveru, right? And Amos Chacham, in his introduction to Sefer Amos, Amos Chacham, the author of the Das Mikra, he explains that Amos's message is clear. Ethical Jews are righteous if they follow all of Hashem's words. Not only Bein Adam L'Makom, but Bein Adam L'Chaveru as well. Not only Bein Adam L'Chaveru, but Bein Adam L'Makom as well. And if we only have one, we're very spiritual, but we're only spiritual about ourselves, we're never going to be successful as a nation. Alternatively, if we're only, quote, ethical, but our ethics don't meet up to the messages of the Torah, so we're not so ethical either. HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us the wisdom to be spiritual and ethical people, and make sure that in our lives, in Emsachem V'Seichel Tov, Bein Elokim V'Adam, Shabbat Shalom.